listener-supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, October 16th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese, hawa, toyosknusum, swama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, we talk with Two Left Feet AK about their October dance series, Introduction to Blues Dancing, which starts tonight at the Alaska Club downtown. Local Juno musicians are putting together an evening of live music to raise funds for Greater Good Charity's hurricane relief efforts. It's called Songs for Support, and it's happening this Friday night at the Alaskan. And the Juno Symphony begins its search for a new music director. Each candidate will visit Juno and conduct a concert, and the first one is this weekend, featuring Shostakovich and more. And they're going to be looking for your feedback. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anakaya ha anikak gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kakwan Ish George Davis, and the word this week is chart.
Chart.
That means halibut. And here is a sentence.
Chart. A go, C-E.
They cooked halibut for them all to eat. Let's hear it again.
Chart.
Halibut. Ganesh Cheesh to Hene Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kakwan Ish George Davis was Tukdane Tan and the child of a Tsagwe Di man. He grew up in Kiik, Cake, Alaska, and learned to speak well because he would always bring traditional foods to the elders there. As someone who fished a lot and spent time on the land, he knew Tlingit place names all over the area, and he learned many stories and advanced ways of speaking.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. A quick announcement, the Juno Commission on Sustainability is hosting a session tonight, Sustainability Impacts of Cruise Ships. It will be at the Mendenhall Valley Library from 6 to 7:30 p.m. The university and ADEC have some research and updates to share on cruise ship impacts, so some learning and Q&A tonight, and there will be a discussion of air, water, and solid waste impacts on the community. You can attend in person or via Zoom. You can find out more on the Facebook page Sustainable Juno or by searching for Juno Commission on Sustainability in your favorite search engine. And another thing that helps with sustainability? Dance classes. The group Two Left Feet AK is beginning a partner dance class tonight at the Alaska Club downtown called Introduction to Blues Dancing. For more, you can visit bit.ly/AKBluesDancing. And here to tell us more on that and some other offerings is Daniel Martin. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'i Gudi. Thank you so much, Daniel, for joining us. I know that you're all the way in Texas. I'm up in Anchorage. Craig, our engineer, is down in Juneau. So we got like a three-way byproduct of communication going on. But Wasi'iti, how's it going?
Thanks for having me, Ganesh Cheesh, for having me. It's so good to be on the radio. I got to slip in a correction first thing, though, and this is my fault. I didn't update you that we're actually not starting until next week. So that's perfect. It gives people a week to clear their schedules and get ready for it. But the three lesson series starts next Wednesday, and it'll run the 23rd, the 30th, and the 6th at the Alaska Club downtown. Okay.
Oh, awesome.
We got that out there.
I was wondering, because you're in Texas, so I thought, well, maybe exactly. Your partner in crime here, Andy Hirsch, was going to be doing the class tonight, but this makes sense. So the classes start next week, but that website, the Bitly website, is still the way to go to figure out for signing up and everything, right?
Well, that is accurate. I believe it's accurate. I tested it, and it takes you to the Facebook page, and that's just sort of to get a little more details if you want to check the times again if you forget that. And you can also contact me through Facebook. The signing up, we're kind of not doing pre-registration. We'll see how it goes. You know, if we got a line out the door, then we'll do pre-registration next time. But for now, the more the merrier. So you can sign up, but you can just pay when you show up next Wednesday. So you'll just pay at the door at the Alaska Club downtown. And just to get that out, because now everybody's wondering, well, how much does it cost? Generally, our lessons that we've done at the Alaska Club have been $10 for members, $20 for non-members. That's Alaska Club members, non-members. And this is a three-lesson block. It's a three-lesson series. So there's no dropping in after the first class. So it's 30 and 60. So 30 for Alaska Club members, 60 for non-members. It's almost a full two-hour block that we're there. You know, we kick off a lesson around 6:15. Say doors at 6, kick off a lesson at 6:15, wrap up in about an hour, and then I can just play music. We can dance. I can work with people. Me and my partner Andy can work with people individually. So it's a lot of it's generally a lot of like a sort of one-on-one time or with the students at the classes that we've been doing at the Alaska Club.
I love that. That's so cool. And your partner, Andy Hirsch, who is also part of this Two Left Feet, right? Club, group.
That's right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's right. She's, you know, she's my life partner and my dance partner, and I'm really lucky. Really lucky to have found her. We actually met at a dance event that I had organized, and I knew there was something there because she was the last person still dancing. As long as I was playing music, she was still dancing. So it was kind of love at first dance there.
We've been teaching dance.
So we've really gotten. I've taught dance and been involved in dance stuff in Juneau on and off for about the last 10 years. But then just this year, me and Andy have gotten sort of more serious about pursuing it. We worked out a really great arrangement with the Alaska Club, they're hosting it. They do marketing and flyers and stuff. And we bring people to the club. So it's a great symbiotic, relationship. So yeah, we're doing lesson series like this one. And then we're also doing just more casual drop-in lessons once a month on second Fridays. So the next one's going to be right after this series. That's going to be November 8th. And all of this dates and stuff and information about the classes, really the best way to get informed about that is to join or just take a look at the Juno Dance Facebook page. It's just facebook.com/JunoDance. You know, it's not just me. It's other folks who are organizing stuff. People are posting stuff on there about salsa stuff going on and other things. I think there's somebody's teaching Lindy Hop lessons now. And we're doing kind of the blues dancing and other things that other folks aren't doing. And so, yeah, Juno Dance on Facebook is a good way to find out about this stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool because it's an actual, I remember the days of Facebook groups, and this is a Facebook group. So it's not just an organization. It's a collection of folks who, like you said, are offering different things, and you can request to join the group, or you can just look at the pages and get the information, which is kind of cool.
Exactly. But,
I want to go back, Daniel, before we get too far into it, and figure out what your story is. How did you get first involved in dance? Did it come to you as a young child, or where did it begin for you?
Well, I my mom tells me that it began for me when the delivery doctor was playing rock and roll in the delivery room when I was being born. And then my music education continued through her dancing in the kitchen and just sort of growing up with lots of music and being part of a family that was very into, you know, none of us were musicians, but just very into music and dancing. So, and then I kind of discovered partner dancing, mostly here in Juneau, you know, just going, somebody was in town teaching swing classes, you know, so I took a little East Coast swing. And then somebody was teaching Lindy Hop, which is kind of a little more advanced type of swing dancing. And then I got really into that. And then I found out that there was this thing called blues dancing. And then that kind of really spoke to me, spoke to my soul more than anything else. And so I've gotten really into blues. I mean, blues music also and related musical genres, soul and R&B and all that great, you know, American popular music. That is just one of the best aspects of American culture of the 20th century, I think, and the dances that go along with that, the kind of dancing you can do to that kind of music, which is maybe different than like the fast swingy stuff or other types of dances that people are more familiar with.
Yeah, it might be hard to describe it in terms of just audio, you know, just orally, but can you describe sort of what blues dancing kind of is for people who might want to be taking this class starting next Wednesday night? What would they be doing?
Absolutely. That's always the question people have. Blues dancing is kind of caught on down south, especially in like swing communities, but I think most people kind of come to it already being partner dancers. And then Juno, some people, anyways, a lot of people don't know what it is. They ask me what it is. And I do kind of struggle a little bit to just encapsulate in words what it is. But actually, blues dances are a whole family of dances done historically, traditionally to different types of blues and related music in different types of settings. Just the way swing dances, there's not just one type of swing dance, there's actually a bunch of them. Blues dancing in general, really emphasizes conversation in the dance. You know, it's not a conversation if only one person is speaking, you know, and I mean speaking through movement. So there's a lot of room for individual expression, but also communication back and forth. Sometimes there can be like a call and response and kind of a thing. And the types of dances range from being very, very close dances, like a close embrace dance. We teach some of that, and we'll be getting into that in this introduction series, because we want to cover sort of the breadth of blues dances. And so from very, very close dances to very, very open dances, where maybe you're not even physically touching the other person, but you're connected with them with the music. And maybe you're doing one thing and they're doing something and you're riffing off of each other. And there's some, you know, and you can make up whatever you can come up with, but also we'll teach specific movements that you can incorporate into your own body. And then also we'll teach, of course, specific moves that people can do with a partner as well. In general, the music is more down tempo, you know, a lot of it you can kind of think of as slow dancing. We did a workshop actually that was called Slow Dancing with Style. It was basically based on blues dancing. Because things are a little slower and it's less emphasized on doing lots of moves, sort of flashy stuff, and there's room for that, but it's more about the subtlety and the communication and just kind of connecting with the music, connecting with your partner, having a conversation, creating something that's greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, when I think of blues music and I think of like, you know, smoky, you know, cool, sexy, you know, and when you were describing sort of the slow, sort of closer dances, it seems like in the areas of your body that might be moving in terms of, you know, either your hips or your shoulders or your feet or whatnot, that seems kind of cool. But then you're describing two sort of different paces, different beat rhythms, and like you can also be communicating from a little bit of a distance where you might be using bigger gestures in terms of your body, right? So you're sort of teaching the ways of like how to communicate that gesture either in close or across the space.
Yes, exactly. Communication is really a fundamental thing. And what's fundamental about communication, of course, is listening, right? So we really focus on listening, whether you're in the leading role or the following role. And those roles are very flexible and they switch back and forth. And I lead and I follow and my partner leads and follows, even in the same song. But listening, even when you're leading, you're listening to the follower. And when you're following, you're also listening and responding. Yeah, something that I guess I want to make sure I mention, because when we talk about doing these closed dances, people think people might be uncomfortable with being close, super close to another person. That's totally fine. We also talk, we also definitely talk about respecting boundaries in the classes. And I want to emphasize that these classes that we teach, all the classes that we teach, are great for couples. They're totally great. If you and your couple want to learn how to connect better on the dance floor, but they're also just as great for people who do not come with a partner. People come on their own, people come with a friend, people come with a partner. Rotating partners throughout a lesson is sort of totally normal and sort of the general way that social dance classes happen. That said, if somebody is with their special person and they just want to dance with them the whole night, that's totally fine.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask about
people
that.
Want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of who class was for, in terms of, because I know it's a partner thing, but you're saying that anybody can join. So if you're an individual and you want to learn these moves, you can still register for the class, which is kind of nice.
Absolutely. Social dancing is a great way to meet people. It's how I met people when I travel around the country. Dancing is always something I'm looking for. And, you know, it makes you part of a community whenever you're a social dancer. You can just go to any town in any big city in the country and in many places around the world and just find, you know, if you're a swing dancer, you find where the swing dancers are. If you're a blues dancer, you find where the blues dancers are. And then suddenly you're part of that community. Because you have kind of a shared language anyway. So it's a great way to meet people. This class is a great introduction for beginners to partner dancing generally. If people think, oh, I'm totally at rock bottom, I don't, you know, I'm intimidated by this, just push through that feeling, like I had to do.
Right.
And the reward will be there. It's very good. This approach to dancing, I think of it more as an approach to dancing than just like a style, strictly speaking. This approach is very much about fundamentals. It's very much about sort of the essence of things. And so the fundamentals that we work on in the class are good for blues dancing, but they're also good for any other type of partner dancing that people do or are interested in doing.
So just to recap, this class starts next Wednesday at Alaska Club downtown. It's called Introduction to Blues Dancing. And you don't need to register in advance. You can find out more by searching the Juno Dance Facebook group. I did want to ask you one last question before we have to go. And that is, so there's the blues dancing class. And I know there's other classes you mentioned, and I'm sure you're rotating through those as you teach different things. But just give us a sense of if people can't make this or they're not interested in blues dancing, just give us the quick rundown on the social dance on Second Fridays and what kind of thing will be happening there.
Well, that is just going to rotate. It's kind of going to rotate. We haven't decided what we're going to teach on the Second Friday thing. Last time we taught waltz. We decided to do something that we had completely sort of different than what we normally are teaching. We try to teach whatever it is that we're teaching in those classes. Again, we try to make sure that we're emphasizing fundamentals that are applicable to all types of social dance. So maybe we'll change things up actually and do something more swingy. People are always interested in doing swingy stuff. Swing rhythms are in blues and they're in jazz and they're kind of all over the place. So you kind of learning ways to dance to that is actually kind of broadly applicable and not just strictly to one type of music.
The social dance, what's great about that is that if you just want to show up every second Friday, you might learn something new. You don't even have to know what's on the program. You just show up and you might be surprised and you learn a little something.
Exactly. But we will put something out on the Juno Dance Facebook group. So, again, that's always a good place to check.
Awesome.
And I do want to mention that we also,
we
love doing private lessons. We have sort of coached people who are trying to get ready to dance at like a wedding or something like that. We've done that a few times. We love doing private lessons. We can figure out a venue to do that if people are interested. And you can contact me, 2leftfeetak@protonmail.com. Two Left Feet, all spelled out, ak@protonmail.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Daniel, so much. It's the AK Blues Dancing Class. It's from the Two Left Feet AK group. It's Introduction to Blues Dancing. It's starting next Wednesday at the Alaska Club downtown. For more information, you can go on the Facebook group Juno Dance and learn all about it. Really appreciate you coming on, Daniel Gunashish.
Awesome, Gunashish. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Up next, Songs for Support is happening in Juneau this Friday. It's local musicians coming together to raise money for hurricane relief. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
The Juneau ferry is delayed. No one's going anywhere, they say. Well, the ferry folk are telling us there ain't no way that we're gonna get to Skagway today. Well, an atmospheric river courses through. I'm missing shining sunlight and the skies are blue. Man, I ain't got nothing but time. And I got open mic at the Alaskan on my mind. Well, the Juneau ferry is delayed. No one's going anywhere, they say. Well, the ferry folk are telling us there ain't no way that we're gonna get to Skagway today. All packed up with nowhere to go. This whole dang week was quite a show. A hard-working gal could use a little bit of fun. I want to see the feather dancers at the Red Onion. Well, the Juneau ferry is delayed. No one's going anywhere, they say. Well, the ferry folk are telling us there ain't no way that we're gonna get to Skagway today. A limbo is a kayak shack out in Auk Bay. Guess the Airbnb still gonna make me pay. I just wanna stay really still and don't do a gosh darn thing and just kinda chill. Oh, the Juneau ferry is delayed. No one's going anywhere, they say. Well, the ferry folk are telling us there ain't no way that we're gonna get to Skagway today. Well, the ferry folk are telling us there ain't no way that we're gonna get to Skagway today.
This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That was the ferry song by Lisa Denny, who performed that in the studio for us last year, right here on the red carpet stage. She is also one of the organizers and musicians who will take part this Friday at 5 p.m. at the Alaskan in a musical evening of support. 20 artists for $20, and 100% of the money is going to support the relief efforts of the recent hurricanes that have ravaged many regions in the United States. I'm joined now by Lisa and Sam Carmack, who has a personal connection to the tragedy as one of the hurricanes tore through her hometown of Greenville, Tennessee. Gunashish, Ha'ye Adi, thank you so much. It's really nice to be able to talk with you both, even though we're talking through sort of major tragedy. But welcome to the show. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us back.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so Sam, yeah, I mentioned that the hurricane tore through your hometown of Greenville. Can you tell us a little bit about what you know about what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. it's a really bizarre experience, especially being somewhere so far from the coast, to have a tragedy like that happen. I started getting some information from my family here in Juneau time around midnight, and that's when people in Appalachia started finding out about how severe the weather was. So it was around 3 or 4 a.m. for them. And it was just absolutely devastating. My whole family, for the most part, is in Appalachia. So if they're not in Tennessee, they're in North Carolina or the surrounding areas. And they've never seen anything like this happen. So it was, I mean, it took probably 10 days for my mom to get water back and power. My sister, I think, is just now getting back into school. And their entire communities in my hometown, not even including the tragedy in Western North Carolina, they're like islands. I mean, the roads and bridges are completely destroyed. They're going to probably take, I don't know, 2 years is what I'm hearing for that to be fixed. On top of just the loss of life, I mean, people missing, people whose entire livelihoods are destroyed. And I mean, it's a very poor area anyway, so it's like really heartbreaking for me to think about the damage.
Wow. Yeah, it's also, I mean, I think hurricanes, I mean, to reach all the way to Tennessee and to still do the amount of damage that it has done is just, it's devastating. It's devastating to think about how many millions of people are displaced, still many without power, still, you know, struggling to even figure out where their family members might be. And so this is really, it's really tragic. And, it's interesting because here we are in Juneau, Alaska, so many thousands of miles away, and you were all finding a way to come together and make a difference. And, that's wonderful. And Lisa, can you tell me a little bit about how this event came together?
Oh, well, honestly, Boston, there's a lot of troubling events happening all over the world right now. These hurricanes are definitely hard hit for our friends. It kept me up at night, and a few days went by of just feeling awful for all of our people in that area. And I decided to just take action as quickly as I could. I can't stop thinking about people who are lost in the mud and the water and stranded without water. And I guess Helene, they're saying it was the second deadliest hurricane to hit mainland US, and just the devastation it's caused across like 6 states is just unrivaled that I know of, and just to be followed right behind by Hurricane Milton. I know that was really tough for Florida. So kind of as overnight, I wanted to throw this event together just to see if Juneau community can come together like we do and send a little love and help to our friends across the way. So we're gonna have a little charity concert. We're gonna get all of our musicians together. We've got 20 musicians, 20 artists. Some of that talent includes Steve Tada, local violinist, Sander Kotlarov, Quentin Woolman Morgan, Sherry Bowman, Afa Licidad, Anne Mahan from the Rain Dogs. We've got Kennedy Krzyzewski. She's been hanging out with the Muskeg Collective lately. We've got Dara Relatos and a bunch more. I think October is kind of the time when Juneau has more cozy local events. And I know we're getting revved up towards all the fun action that Halloween time will be. But I think this is going to be a nice locals event, like a cozy gather and enjoy some good tunes. And whatever we raise is going to go, 100% of that is going to go to greater good charities. I've partnered with the Jack, and they're going to be transferring all of the proceeds to greater goods. They are on the ground active, and as they receive supply and aid requests from communities in need. They're gathering funds and resources and fulfilling them. They're sending trucks with food and water and hygiene products, pet supplies. They're helping pets. They're helping people. They're helping bees. They're providing bee pollen substitute, sugar, and syrup to beekeepers. I know that could have intense impacts on our ecosystems and our food security. Their teams are working with dozens of local, state, national partners to deliver this assistance as efficiently and effectively as they can. And I hope that we're able to help them in their good efforts.
Yeah, I think it's, I want to shout out to Jack there for being your umbrella, being able to collect those funds in sort of a nonprofit way and be able to pass those on 100% on to greater good. How did you come about the choice of greater good? I'm just curious because I know a lot of people here, you know, donate to the Red Cross
or donate. Yeah. And there's definitely a lot of awesome charities and organizations working, you know, locally and on larger scales. I greater good caught my eye because they're working on such a large scale and they really seemed like they were just active and like getting in there, and they were just on the ground and working at like the sense with a sense of urgency that I really felt in my heart, and I really wanted to support them in their actions.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And Sam, I know, it's tough, but I know if people can't make it on Friday, obviously they could go to, you know, greatergood.org and make a donation, but if they can't make it Friday, and is there other things that they could do besides giving money? Is there other things that you know of that people might be able to help out those who are in need?
Yeah, I mean, I think that honestly, just having an awareness of these climate tragedies that keep happening, they are becoming more and more frequent. And it's not really a matter of if we are to experience one. Here in Juneau, we have as well. It's a matter of when. So I think continuing to advocate for policy changes and accountability for these disasters is huge. And I also think just listening to the people in Appalachia, sharing their stories, sharing what they can and building supplies, food. I mean, the devastation is truly unimaginable. So of course we hope you can make it Friday, but I think just having that awareness, advocating for climate advocacy, you know, we have one planet, and I think it's just hitting closer and closer to home, and especially in places that previously have never dealt with this kind of event before. So
yeah, I mean, obviously Juneau, you know, we've had problems with flooding over the last couple years, it, you know, it's just something that we're starting to feel the pain of. These folks all across those states are having so much difficulty. And yeah, like you said, the devastation is just unlike anything many people have seen before. Have you been able to connect with all of your folks and be able to sort of make sure everybody's all right?
Yeah, I am so grateful that my family is safe and they have access to everything they need. And for the most part, their properties are undamaged, things like that. And honestly, I just want to say I'm so grateful for Lisa to put something like this together, because I work in tourism during the summer and I get a lot of people from the South, and I've been telling them that we're doing this. They ask where I'm from, and you know, people don't really talk about this kind of stuff on the West Coast, let alone up here in, you know, Juneau, Alaska. And the fact that our community shows up, I just think is really cool. So very grateful for my family. I know a lot of people we're not as lucky, and especially I have a lot of friends in Western North Carolina, and it was kind of a holding my breath situation because they didn't have any sort of Wi-Fi. So there were a few days before I could, you know for sure that they were okay.
Wow. Is there, Lisa, is there somewhere local that we can find out more about this particular event, or is it just we want to show up at the Alaskan at 5 p.m. on Friday, throw down our $20 and you know, enjoy some music while actually helping others out as well. Is there somewhere on Facebook or something, there an event that people could go find?
I mean, if anyone wants to know more about this event directly, they can certainly message me on my Instagram at Lisa Mohalla. Otherwise, yeah, come down on Friday, 5 p.m. till late o'clock. It's going to be
late o'clock.
A long
I like
night.
That. Yeah. 20 artists, $20. We listed off a bunch of the artists who will be there. There's going to be so many people in support of the hurricane relief. Of course, if you want more information about Greater Good, you can go to greatergood.org. If you can't make it Friday, you can make a donation there. And as Sam said, just being aware, sharing stories on your social medias, sharing stories. Individuals are affected, and that is one way to get the awareness out there, is by sharing the stories of folks who are going through this. Sam, our hearts and are with you and your family and all the safety there. It's Songs for Support. It's this Friday at the Alaskan, 20 musicians for $20 for a cause to help out the hurricane relief down in the States. Really appreciate you coming on the show, Gwyneth Cheese, for being here today.
Mahalo. Thanks again for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, up next, the Juno Symphony previews their upcoming concert this weekend, and we'll meet one of the candidates for their new music director position. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Step in to the savory moment. In the north, winter gets dark. The farther north you go, the darker and darker and darker it gets. Consider these daylight hours in mid-January. Seattle, Washington, 9 hours of daylight. Sitka, Alaska, 7 1/3 hours. Anchorage, 6 1/3. Fairbanks, 5. Utqiagvik, formerly known as Barrow, 0 hours. In Alaska's northernmost city, the sun doesn't rise in midwinter for 65 days.
65 days divided by 30, 2 months.
Cue those full spectrum lights. But experts say dark days also call for salmon, leafy greens, and kimchi. A 2022 study published in the journal Nutrients reports that omega-3 oils, of which salmon has plenty, protect against depression. Salmon is also high in vitamins D and B12, two other mood boosters. As for leafy greens, a 2022 article in U.S. News and World Report explains that plants like kale and spinach contain high levels of magnesium, which regulates the stress hormone cortisol. And finally, kimchi, that spicy cabbage condiment. Fermented foods like kimchi are great for the digestive system, which is, according to Johns Hopkins Medicine, your body's second brain. Neurotransmitters like serotonin are produced there, and apparently they love Korean takeout. So if the dark days are getting you down, make this salad for dinner tonight. Massage some chopped kale with olive oil, lemon juice, and salt. Top with chunks of canned salmon, then drizzle on a kimchi-spiked yum-yum sauce. That alone should make you smile. And for dessert, dark chocolate. According to the Cleveland Clinic, chocolate containing 70% or more cocoa stimulates dopamine production. If you live in Utqiagvik, you can eat the whole bar. Find the full recipe for midwinter salmon salad at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Shortroads. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That was a little Boulanger, which we will talk about in just a minute. It will be part of the program that is happening this weekend, Brilliant Defiance. Also on the program is Shostakovich and Mendelssohn. And the conductor is the first candidate in the search for a new musical director for the Juno Symphony. There will be four candidates this season. And the symphony is also looking for your feedback. We'll talk to Charlotte about that here in just a second. JunoSymphony.org is the website for all the information. And joining me now is Charlotte Truitt, Executive Director, and Dwayne Corbin, conductor and, I guess, candidate. We're in an election season. We might as well say you're a candidate. Gunath Chishat Yeadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. Wasaiti, how's it going? How's your time in Juno so far, Dwayne?
Oh, it's been really, really great. We've had three wonderful rehearsals so far, last week and this week, and I'm just really excited to be able to present this program.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about you, where you're from, a little bit of your history.
Yeah, I live in Newburgh, Oregon, which is an hour outside of Portland, and I have been coming up to play with the symphony since 2009. At that time, about once a year to come up and play timpani or percussion, or to work with other groups in the Juno area, in the schools or the Taku Winds or other groups. And but it would always, the primary goal was always come up playing with the symphony. And I teach at George Fox University in Newburgh, Oregon, and do a lot of freelancing around town as well, and guest conduct in bands and orchestras in that region as well. So. Yeah, happy to be up here and have been principal percussion with the symphony for the last 2 years now, coming up most concerts.
I love that. So when your percussion journey started, did that start as a kid, like you banging on, you know, pots and pans in the kitchen, driving your parents crazy or what?
Well, yes, absolutely. And quite literally, my mother is a piano player. And so she pulled out literally the pots and pans when I was real little and just said, let's just try this out, and said, oh, I think we have a match.
Nice. I love that. And so then how did conducting come about for you? Were you a player for most of the time, and then conducting became part of a progression over time?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a leader in music as well as a performer from the back in terms of percussion and drum kit. And even from my middle school era days in the 80s, I really looked up to my band director at school and I thought, hey, this is a really great job. I really want to do this. And so that was always my intention going off to university and conservatory and looking at a music education program and getting certification in terms of K-12 teaching in Illinois, Washington, and Oregon, and teaching in the public schools for a little bit. But I pretty quickly transitioned into university level conducting. And I've been there for almost 25 years and really enjoyed that, but then also conducting groups outside of the universities as well in both the band and orchestra fields. So I still want to keep playing percussion. I love it. And it I think as a conductor, when you stay involved as a player, it really helps inform your conducting as well and keeps you grounded and kind of never forgetting, you know, like what the musicians themselves actually need to pop a concert. And really grounded in terms of what it takes to prepare a concert. So I really love doing both conducting as well as performing as a percussionist.
Is it possible that we could see, like, usually the percussion folks are in the back, right, with the big, you know, big drums and stuff. Is it right. possible that we could see some percussion instruments up near where the conductor is and you doing that at the same time as conducting? Would that be an interesting challenge?
That would be a very interesting challenge. I think a year ago we did a piece that was a concerto for saxophone and drum set that were up in the front. I was not the artist for that. I was playing timpani on that show. But we have seen it recently on this stage with the orchestra.
That's awesome. I love that. That would be so cool. I that would be such an interesting thing to see. At least just the one drum so you can just bang it once in a while. That would be
exactly.
So Charlotte, so welcome to a new season of the Juno Symphony, right? And we are on the search for a music director. Charlotte is the executive director of the Juno Symphony. Tell me a little bit about what the process is going to be for the candidates this year and where we're at now. Dwayne is the first candidate, but tell us a little bit about the search.
Okay, well, thank you. Great to be with you this afternoon, Boston. And we are excited about our music director search year, Dwayne being our first candidate, and then we'll have three additional candidates. We'll conduct our main stage concerts. And we really want to get feedback from the audience. There'll be an opportunity for surveys following each of the concerts for people to give us their feedback and information. That'll all go to the voting body of the member musicians and the board of directors who actually do the voting at the end of the season to help determine our next music directors. So they do look to get that community input. And we are also encouraging people to come and get to know each of the conductors by attending the pre-concert conversations and Q&A sessions that happen before each concert. So, for example, our concert on Saturday night starts at 7:30, but Dwayne will be talking with the audience at 6:30. And for a half hour, you'll get to hear a little bit more from him about the content of the program and a time of question and answers. So we encourage people to come and listen to those talks and then also to stick around after the concerts and get to know them in the lobby and spend a little time with them there as well. So lots of opportunities for our musicians to engage with all of the conductors, of course, in rehearsals and extra activities. And we're just excited that these four fine conductors are with us this year to help us determine who will be the next music director of the Juno Symphony.
I love that. And does the music director candidate pick the program that we're going to be hearing?
That's a great question. This year they are not. So they are given a program that's already been pre-programmed that was advertised earlier in the summer. But what we are getting from each of the candidates is we're asking them to give us a vision for the 25-26 season. And in that, we'll be asking them to program three classic concerts and one pops concert. So that will be submitted to all the voting members so that they can see really what would these conductors select for this orchestra after working with them and knowing the history of all the different pieces that the symphony has played. You know, if people are ever curious about what the symphony has done, we do maintain the archives on our website. So you can look back for many, many years to see what's been played. They will know what's been played and they will have had experience working with the orchestra. And then we'll see what they would program for a potential season with us following their auditions.
Okay, well, that's good information. And so, Dwayne, I have some follow-ups for you then.
Sure.
Which is interesting. It must be strange. I know this is how the music world works, but it must be strange to, like, basically audition in October and not know if you've got the gig until maybe like 9-10 months later, because you're the first. So that must be interesting. But you know the symphony because, like you said, you've been up here playing with them for the last few years. So right. You understand sort of what that gig is. And so that, I just think that's interesting that challenge. Are you a patient person? Can you wait till May or June to find out?
Yeah, it would be end of June. And I am generally a patient person in most ways, but you're right. This is, it's part of being a conductor. We have to do this in all of the different orchestras all over the place. And so that's standard. It would be great if there was a faster way to do it, but just the fact that we have our concerts spread out so much it forces that. So it's normal. You just have to be
very patient. C'est la vie, as they say, right?
Yep, exactly.
So speaking of that, and speaking a little bit of the few little words that I know, listen to the Boulanger, which was, can you give us the title of that piece?
Yeah, the title in English is On a Spring Morning, and the piece was originally written by Lily Boulanger, who is was only 25 when she did this orchestration that we listened to, and she unfortunately passed away not very long after this. She had Crohn's disease, but of course at that time in 1918, they didn't have that diagnosis, and had that and several other really strong health problems. And that's partially where we get this theme of brilliant defiance for this program. She was a very talented young composer at a time where women were not often given that opportunity. She won the Prix de Rome, a huge composition contest, and did get the privilege of going and studying in Rome for a brief amount of time, but her health was so poor She wasn't able to really do a lot of traveling other than that one trip. So her compositions came as a way to kind of push back against her personal challenges and her health challenges. And she had a lot of music composed in the 6 years that she was very active as a composer. And this is one of her last pieces, and certainly her last full orchestra piece.
Wow, that's amazing. And so when you get assigned, like Charlotte was describing, so that you didn't choose this program, it was assigned to you.
Correct.
Shostakovich, Mendelssohn, and Boulanger. How do you take that as an assignment? Were you familiar with all these pieces? What is the challenge for you in then bringing that to life with the Juno Symphony?
Yeah, I was very familiar with the Shostakovich. I've actually played that with the symphony here in 2009 as a percussionist. And it's one of my favorite symphonies in the entire world. So this was actually the dream assignment. It could have been very awkward if they had assigned a symphony I really didn't like. But fortunately, I was very lucky to be able to jump into something that is literally top five musical pieces in the world for me. I didn't know the Boulanger at all, so I was really delighted to have that. So part of being a conductor or being any musician is learning music you haven't learned before. And there's lots of ways we do that, playing at the piano, listening to recordings, just kind of going through the music and becoming familiar with it. For me, I had to translate a whole sheet of French terms to understand this piece and really kind of get inside what this piece is all about. But the fun thing with this one is she started it with a version for piano and violin. And so I've been listening to that original one and looking at the piano part and the violin part and kind of then seeing how she then expanded it for full orchestra really revealed a lot about the piece.
Oh, that's so amazing. Well, you are the first candidate. There's going to be three more. The season is starting. Charlotte, give us the rundown of dates and times for this particular concert. And also, I'm sure season tickets are available. Give us the pitch.
Okay, well, concerts are this weekend, Saturday night, October 19th at 7:30, and then Sunday afternoon, the 20th at 3 p.m. Tickets can be purchased at junosymphony.org, and you do have a little more time to get season tickets. There is a 10% discount on the season tickets. If you go ahead and get the whole package, you can get that now, or you can get the individual concert seats as well at junosymphony.org. I do want to say we have pay as you can on Sunday, and we also have free student seating. Thanks to the grants and the funding that has been provided to us through the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, we are able to extend that invite to students to attend for free and come and get inspired by these young composers and be a part of the Juno Symphony. I think people will be delighted with this performance.
Lovely. Dwayne Corbin, Charlotte Truitt, thank you so much. JunoSymphony.org. We're going to listen to just a little bit of the Shostakovich as we end the program today. Break a leg. What do they say in music? Do they say break a leg is a theater term. What do you say in music?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, we say break a leg, and then we always giggle and say, please don't.
Right, of course. Well, thank you so much, Gunnar the Chiefs, for being here. We'll go out with a little Shostakovich. That'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we talk with Ernestine Hayes about her upcoming lecture at this Friday's evening at Egan, plus author Janae Simone on her book Teaching in the Dark, and Bustin' Out Boutique previews this weekend's Bra Drive. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis and Craig George, our engineer. Thank you, Craig. Gunath Cheesh, and have a joyous Juno evening.